Well, thank you for those, Kathy. Appreciate you playing. And after that long hiatus, 3 weeks it's been, we get to the last part of Daniel chapter 9 tonight. So get to what everybody thinks of when they think of Daniel 9. That's Daniel's 70th week. And when you look at the chapter, that's just the last 7-8 verses. There's a whole lot more to Daniel chapter 9 than the vision and the 70 weeks that he has told about. So we looked at Daniel's prayer that he had. And come on, come back. There we go. So we'll go ahead and read the whole passage. Verses. Get over there. Verses 20 through 27, and then we'll kind of come back through and take apart what is here that concerns us prophetically as we see the response of the Lord here in this passage. We've seen his prayer and the petition and his confession, and we see the Lord's response to that. It says, "And whilst I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel, and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God for the holy mountain of my God, yea, whilst I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. And he informed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give thee skill and understanding. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore understand the matter and consider the vision." 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city, to finish the transgression, and to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again in the wall, even in troublous times. And after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the Prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. And the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And so when we look at this, there's really not a lot for the 70 weeks for that matter. Since much of this is the conversation that Gabriel has with Daniel in noting who Daniel is. And we see that as Daniel is praying, Gabriel appears to him. Again, we see that back in chapter 8, verse 16. It's noted that Gabriel has come to Daniel. And Daniel is acknowledging that this is the same angel that came to me before. Obviously, in a man's get-up. Though we know him as the angel Gabriel that comes to him, and Daniel notes that he is arriving during a time of the evening offering. And he says evening. I mean, we don't think of 3 p.m. as being the evening, but that's the time that it's referring to. We also have to stop and consider Jewish time. 6 p.m. starts the new day. So at 6 p.m. tonight, it's Thursday for a Jew. It's 6 p.m. on Wednesday for us, but their Thursday started at 6 p.m. and it'll go until 6 p.m. tomorrow. So the evening, in a sense, of the day is 3 o'clock, because 3 more hours, and what happens to Wednesday? It's gone. So I think that's the reasoning behind putting evening there, but it's the 3 o'clock, the afternoon oblation, that Daniel is still remembering. Because are they offering sacrifices in Israel, in Jerusalem, in Daniel's day at this time? No, because the temple's not there. It was destroyed. And it hasn't been rebuilt yet. That's still yet to come. It hasn't happened in Daniel's day. Daniel will be dead before the temple is rebuilt by the decree from Cyrus to, you know, rebuild the temple that we see with Ezra. Nehemiah's rebuilding the wall, but that rebuilding of the temple is still future after the Babylonian captivity. Daniel is not part of that. So he's still remembering that old practice, and it was a time of prayer for the Israelites when that afternoon sacrifice would be made there on the altar. It was a time of prayer, and we see it still used in the New Testament within the life of Christ as well, and there's significance there because it's about that time when he's dead on the cross and is taken off the cross. But so it's that time of, it is a time of prayer, and Daniel has kept that practice going now for all these decades, because we're coming down to the end of Daniel's life. So he's been away from Israel for, you know, 70 years now. And this is still part of his practice. He still prays at this time. Why? It's my responsibility. I am a Jewish believer following the Lord to the best of my abilities. Can I sacrifice for my sin? No. But does that mean I stop everything else that I'm to do as a Jewish believer? No. He can still talk to his God as he had done when he was in Jerusalem, when the temple was there, and he may have gone there as a teenage boy. So he keeps that up. But notice how God responds to that. As Gabriel speaks of Daniel, he tells him, "You are greatly beloved. God, through Gabriel, is letting Daniel know he's greatly beloved. God's taking note of this. God sees his devotion to his God, his willingness to live for him in, at best, strenuous, constraining circumstances, and acknowledging that you are a man greatly beloved." And again, it's noted that he has come while he is praying, and notes that God's acknowledging you're praying, and so he is sending you this information about your people Israel, because as we noted again 3 weeks ago, Daniel's prayer was concerning his people. As the time of the 70 years was coming to a close, because we saw at the beginning of that chapter, in verse 2, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood the first year of Darius, I understood by the books the number of years whereof the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. And so he was noting, and we looked at that, and Daniel is noting, hey, that 70 years, it's coming to an end. And so he's praying for his people Israel, because with that end, that means they're going to be able to return to Jerusalem. And maybe my people have finally got their heads straight about worshiping God as they should. We were sent off into captivity because of their rebellion, because of their disobedience. And so we see that prayer of confession that Daniel has for his people. He's concerned. Even though he's seeking to live right, he's concerned about his people, and he's praying for them. And God takes note of that. May we take heart in knowing. I doubt that any of us will have the angel Gabriel come to us and let us know, you are dearly beloved, you've been praying for your nation, and here's something God's going to do for you. No, I don't think that's going to happen. But we do know God hears our prayers. And that should be worth all of it. Whether we hear anything or not, it's God hears my prayers. Whether he will answer it the way I would like will remain to be seen. But God does listen, God does hear, and God has his purpose and plan unfolding, and we should be praying for that purpose and plan to unfold. And so we see that with Daniel. He's beloved, and in doing so, Gabriel lets him know that God still is at work with your people. He's not done with them. And he notes these 77s here in verse 24, and that's kind of where we're going to focus then for the rest that we have here. The 70 weeks are determined upon thy people, and this is 77s. We have translated it into weeks, 70 weeks. And as we see it unfold, it's 70 weeks of years. So we end up with 490 years being addressed here, a total of. And they're broken down into three spots, 7 weeks, 62 weeks, and 1 week. And he notes those breaks, and we'll look at that as we go a little bit further. But these are reserved for the Israelites in Jerusalem. This is God's dealing with his people. That he has a sixfold purpose to unfold. And it is interesting to see this as you look at verse 24. He notes this. This 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. And so we see this sixfold purpose of these 77s is to bring God's redemptive plan to Israel. Sin needs to be addressed. Does Daniel realize that? Yeah. I think Daniel realizes that the law addresses the sin issue to an extent, but it doesn't eliminate it. It's a band-aid for the problem, because they're always having to sacrifice animals for every sin that's committed over and over and over and over again. They know that their Messiah is coming who will take care of this sin issue completely. But has he come yet? No. Daniel knows Isaiah's prophecies, knows that that is still future, and here God is letting him know that, yes, that redemptive plan is still yet future. And it's wrapped up in this 70 weeks, the 77s here, that God is dealing with concerning Israel. Which also helps us, I think, understand and see some problems with those that want to replace Israel with the church, is this 70 weeks isn't done yet. There's only been 69 of these weeks. And he hasn't said, here's the change. Oh, by the way, no, this all moves over to the church. It's not addressed that way. It's addressed to the nation Israel, to his chosen people. And so he brings this up and notes that this redemptive plan to finish transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. I find it interesting that our King James translators, does somebody else have a different translation?
WNESB.
Okay. How does that version end verse 24? Yeah, how does it end, verse 24? Just the last few words. To anoint.
Atonement for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place.
Okay, it puts the most holy place. It adds the word place. Now, the reason why I say that is because everywhere else in our King James Bible, where the two words here, the two Hebrew words, which are a duplication, it is Kodesh, Kodesh. And our translators have translated it the most holy place everywhere else in the Old Testament, because it refers to the most holy place in reference to the tabernacle or the temple, the inner part where the high priest went once a year to offer atonement on the Day of Atonement. That's where the mercy seat was, and the cherubim standing over the mercy seat. That is the most holy place. Outside of that, beyond the veil, was the holy place. And then outside of that was, you know, the rest of the temple. But the most holy place was that inner spot where the high priest went once a year to offer the sins, the sacrifice for sin, to atone for a year for the people of Israel. And that's always been Kodesh, Kodesh. It's just a duplication of that word. But here, it's that same phrase. And why our English translators didn't say the most holy place, I don't know. It, to me, it doesn't make sense why they didn't add that word there, because everywhere else it's referring to that place, and there is seemingly no reason to think that it's not referring to that same place. Even though, yes, in Daniel's day, is there a most holy place? No, because the temple's been destroyed. The temple isn't there, so there is no most holy place currently in Daniel's day. But there's been enough prophecy told that it may be destroyed now, but prophecy tells us there's going to be another temple. So will there be another most holy place future? Yes. So again, why they didn't, I'm at a loss, because it does affect what we're looking at here. To anoint the most holy. The most holy what? What is he referring to? Well, again, if we look at the rest of the Old Testament and how these words are used, the most holy place. Oh, well, we know where that is. We know what that is. Yes, to anoint the most holy place. So we have this being noted here, and so we see these weeks being known. And so he brings this up in verse 25. He says, "Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to rebuild Jerusalem unto the Messiah, the Prince, shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again in the wall, even in troublous times." And so he notes these two seemingly together, the 7 weeks and the 62, for a total of 483 years. He notes when that time clock starts, these 70s of weeks, excuse me, it starts, it's not referring to Cyrus's decree to rebuild the temple. Because does he say the decree to rebuild the temple here? No. It says to restore and build Jerusalem, not the temple. So it's not referring to Cyrus's decree, which was in 538 BC. It is referring to the restoring and rebuilding of the city, which we find with Nehemiah. He's called back. What is Nehemiah burdened to do? To rebuild the wall, to rebuild Jerusalem. The walls are down. And this is an after effect, And this is a reference to the decree by Artaxerxes to go back. Yes, go. Excuse me. Go and rebuild. And that's in 445 BC. So it's, you know, almost 100 years later when that takes place. And so there is that distinction. So I know some prophecy people have brought up it's the rebuilding of the temple, and it's not. I mean, it's clearly it doesn't say the rebuilding of the temple. And so the time clock doesn't start in 538, because if it started in 538, when would 483 years end? Before Messiah ever came. I mean, if it's 538 and we count down, you know, 483 years, that's about 50, 60 BC. Is Christ born? But it talks about Messiah being cut off. That doesn't work. Christ is still, we still got 50-ish years to go before Christ is born. So, it doesn't refer to the temple. It refers to the rebuilding of Jerusalem, which comes later. And A.C. Gabelline notes, as we look at these dates, Sir Robert Anderson states that the starting date is March 14th, 445 B.C. And he's dated this, Sir Robert Anderson, the Messiah's cutoff date is April 6th in A.D. 32, which does come out to work out this time schedule here of the 483 years between those two dates. It's actually 173,880 days, which equals out to those 483 years when we consider the Jewish calendar. The Jewish calendar was 12 months of 30 days. And then every so often, seven times within a 19-year period, in the spring, they would toss in a 13th month of 30 days to help bring things back into time frame with seasons based on the sun, because 30-day periods is only 360 days, but we have how many days in a year? 365 and one quarter each year. So, you know, after a year, we're 5 days behind. Another year, now we're 10 days behind. Another year, we're 15. So you see the in alignment with the sun, because that's our calendar, our year is our circulation around the sun, gets moved off, and they would know that from their planting schedules and all of this. And so again, seven times in 19 years, or about every third-ish year, they come in and toss in a 30-day month in the springtime to get that cycle back in place. We do a leap year once every 4 years, and we add a day in because of that quarter day that we miss. We are not taking into effect, and it adds up after a while. And so we add it in every 4 years. The Jews were working off of what is typically a lunar calendar of watching the phase of the moon. And it's 29 and a half days. So they go with 30 days, because can we really tell when the new moon is? No, because the new moon's at the sun. You can't. It's kind of hard to look. Oh, yeah, I see a slight sliver of it on that side. No. So that's why they go with the 30-day calendar. It's a lunar calendar, and this causes this issue for them. So those things all figure in and factor in, which makes really some of this hard to bring to our calendars, because we have rather precise calendars, whereas they did not. So we just note those days. So giving those dates are one thing, but I would take it a little bit with a grain of salt. I would not dogmatically hold to March 14th, 445 BC, and April 6th, AD 32, as being the definite dates, because we're using current calendar dates and putting them back in to this era where they didn't use those kinds of dating. So I take it with a grain of salt, but we've got to put something there, so that's fine. But we do see these number of days. And as we look at these, there's the compilation of the 7 weeks and the 70 weeks. There's no break there. He brings those one right after the other as he notes about these things that are going to happen, but noting that after the end of 72 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And so we see this cutting off being of Messiah. That is the public showing of Jesus Christ as king, as their Messiah, which we would put as the triumphal entry of the Lord Jesus Christ on Palm Sunday. Did they accept their king? No. Their Messiah was cut off. They rejected him. And in just a few days, he will be crucified. And so we have that marking the end of that. But also note, as you continue reading, we see the Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. I mean, he didn't die for himself, did he? No, Messiah died for the sins of mankind. And so he's noting this. We continue in verse 26. And the people of the prince that shall come, which seems to be reference to what we would know as the Roman Empire, because of what's about to be said. The people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. So as we see this concluding of this 7 weeks and 62 weeks, the first 69, how much time is involved? We have the cutting off of Messiah. Let's use 32 AD as the date. That's when Messiah is crucified. But he continues with what events are happening here. He says, Jerusalem, the city's going to be destroyed. The sanctuary, i.e. the temple, is going to be destroyed. Did that happen in 32 AD? No, that happens in 70 AD when Titus, part of the Roman Empire, that people that shall come, destroys it then. So this cutting off of this 69 weeks, we have a gap of several years here from, again, 32 AD to 70. So we've got 28 years. 38 years, that are, in essence, unaccounted for with these weeks of years that he's referring to. So there is a gap of time between the ending of the 69th and the 70th week, because we haven't even touched the 70th week yet. He's told us after the 62, this is what happens. Messiah's cut off, and your temple's destroyed. Okay, Messiah's cut off. The temple's not destroyed yet. Now the temple's destroyed. So now that 69 weeks is unfolded, but we've had this length of time here between the cutting off of Messiah and the destruction of the temple so that there is this undetermined amount of break of time. It's not a continuous 479 years. We've had 483 come, Messiah was cut off. We've had a few more years happen, but it's noted it's not included as one of the weeks in here. Because Messiah's cut off, but the temple isn't destroyed until some years later. And now we come to verse 27, which speaks of that last week. So they're not consecutive by nature of the from our vantage point, the historical perspective. Because we can't look back at history and say, well, yeah, that seventh week came in and happened after the temple was destroyed, because verse 27 speaks about a temple. But verse 26 speaks about the sanctuary and the destruction of the city. So if there's a destruction of the city in verse 26 and the sanctuary, but verse 27 speaks about this abomination of desolation in the temple, how do we reconcile that with consecutive years? We can't. There is a break, an undetermined break that is being noted here. And so we see as we move forward then with this, and he, that is this prince of the people, the Roman Empire and the revival of it in the end days, he shall confirm the covenant with many for one week, there's our 70th week, and he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease, and for the overspreading of abominations shall he make desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. In the midst of the week, excuse me, I knew I missed a phrase in there, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. There's our 70th week, that this, we would know him as the Antichrist. That is part of that last empire that we've already seen depicted for us in Daniel's, in Nebuchadnezzar's visions and these others that we have in our booklet and in our graphic that we have from Larkin, that the Antichrist is going to have a covenant of peace with the Israelites. And in the midst of that week, he's going to break that covenant and he's going to put himself up as God, as we see in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, Matthew chapter 24, verse 15. In the midst of it, he's going to come and enter Jerusalem and say, Israel, I'm your Messiah, I'm your God. He's going to desecrate the temple that's been rebuilt. We see it prophetically pictured in, and we'll see this coming up in these last closing chapters, of Antiochus Epiphanes desecrating the temple in his day, and the Maccabees restoring the temple. And he is a figure of the Antichrist because he offers a pig on the altar of Zeus that he has put in the temple and desecrates it so the Jews can't use it. And so he prefigures the Antichrist. He's not necessarily going to offer a pig. He's offering himself as being God to the Israelites in the middle of the 70th week, which is the tribulation period. The 7 years of that period is this 7 weeks. So we see that connection, if you will. But he breaks that covenant with them in the midst of that, and we have this desolation that takes place of the temple that is at some point going to be restored. We see it destroyed in verse 26, yet we see it back in operation in verse 27, because there can't be a desecrated temple unless there's a temple to desecrate. And Israel hasn't had a temple since 70 AD. They want to build a temple. They have the means to do so. And there's nothing that I see prophetically that we couldn't see a temple start being built tomorrow and be active as far as the Israelites are concerned. Now, the Muslims would not like it, but it can be built on the Temple Mount and they don't have to move the Dome of the Rock. Temple can be put where it should be without that, but the Muslims would just be up in arms that the Israelites would do such a thing, but they are definitely in a place that they could do that. They have the materials. They have all the things that we read of in the Old Testament, the showbread tables, the menorahs, you name it, they have it, they're ready for it. They just need to feel bold enough to say, you know what, Muslims, we don't care what you think. We're building our temple. And they would have it in place. Now, I think for us, that would certainly encourage our hearts in the sense that, yeah, the end days are coming soon, but the temple being built has no prophetic significance apart from that during the 7 weeks of tribulation when God is dealing with them again, that they have a temple. We just don't know when it's going to be built. And since we live in our day and we see what the Jews have available to them and what they want to accomplish, again, the temple could be started being built tomorrow. And it could be around for another 200 years before that 70th week of God is accomplished, before the tribulation period. There's nothing there about, well, the temple's there, so obviously tomorrow the rapture's going to... No. That doesn't fit into that prophetic calendar. So it's interesting that we see it here in our passage, here and here, yet destroyed here and here. So it's obviously come back. It hasn't come back yet. And in their timing, it will come back. You know, what's going to be the impetus for it? I don't know. I really don't know. I do wonder with Ezekiel's war that we read of. Again, there's no place to land in the prophetic calendar. Where does that war happen? We don't know. Is it right into the tribulation period? Is it right before the tribulation period? You have people believing both. Hard to say. It may be that that war is the cause for the rise of the Antichrist to then offer peace to Israel. But yet Israel's enemies have been destroyed, so what peace does he have to offer? When you read the nations that come up against Israel there, that's the Muslim countries, and they're taken out. Does that provide an opportunity for them to build their temple? I would see, to me personally, yes. The aftermath of that war, whenever it happens, opens the door for them to build their temple without any Muslim reprisal. Because their Muslim neighbors are part of that have come to take them out, and God takes them out. So who cares about what the Muslims think, because they're not really much around and they're not in a position to do anything. So let's build our temple. So how that all fits in the grand scheme of things, well, we'll find out soon enough. Whether we're here to see it or whether we're looking down from over heaven's walls on the world, we'll find out. But it is interesting to see these things unfold, to realize that, yes, the end times are here. And while we may see the darkness, it, to me, is very glorious to realize, yes, we may very well be hearing that trumpet and that shout and be gone. And know that this will unfold. So, interesting days in which to live, and exciting days to continue to live for the Lord. We'll get into chapters 10 and 11, Lord willing, next week, and get into a ping pong match between the kings of the north and kings of the south. And all that's the best I can describe it is, this is a ping pong match, and you're following the ball go back and forth between the one and the other. and Israel is caught in the middle. So we'll pick that up next week.